Welcome to Delivering Miracles, a podcast to teach women like you tips and strategies on how you can have a safer pregnancy so you can bring home a healthy baby. I'm your host and your high-risk pregnancy expert, Farijat Deshpande. I can't wait to chat with you. Through our whole journey, through fertility treatment, a very high-risk pregnancy, a very long NICU stay, and for all the time that our son has been home for the several years since he was discharged from the hospital, there's one specific type of comment that I have heard that always rubbed me the wrong way. Now, if you've heard this podcast before, you know that I'm really protective of women and couples that are going through such hard times because it's so hard for people to understand what they're going through, and so many well-intentioned comments can really hurt. Even from people who are working in the field but haven't personally been through this, it's hard for them to understand. So this particular comment is really kind and it's meant to be very supportive. And that comment is, don't lose hope. Don't lose hope. I heard it through our fertility treatment when we found out that, you know, I was going to need medication and help to get pregnant. And then as we were going through the cycles and after we lost our first, don't lose hope. It'll happen for you. Don't lose hope. It was all the months that I was on bed rest. Don't lose hope. Your baby will be okay. Don't lose hope. And all the very, very long days in the NICU, don't lose hope. He'll be okay. Don't lose hope. And now if you just look at that comment as it is, there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with that. That's exactly actually what people going through it, people like me going through it, need to feel, right? When you have that hope, that's what drives you. That's what pushes you forward. That's what gives you the strength to get through one more day of torture. Is what it feels like sometimes, right? One more day of unknowns, one more day of fighting and hoping, really hoping, right? You need that hope. But there's a downside to this advice that nobody's talking about, that is what really grates on me and makes me feel like it's really not great advice to give. Because number one, anyone who's going through this fight, fighting to get pregnant, fighting to stay pregnant, fighting to bring a baby home, I can guarantee you that there is so much hope in that person, so much more than you would ever realize. So don't lose hope is assuming that there isn't any, that they don't feel hope, which is ridiculous and completely untrue. But more than that, what bothers me about this advice, really the main reason why it really bugs me, is because it doesn't leave room for people like me, couples like us who are going through fertility treatment, who are going through a high-risk pregnancy, who are going through the NICU, who are parenting children with medical complications or whatever that journey is, it doesn't leave room to really share how you're feeling. There are days when you don't have hope. So do we just not talk about those days? Do we just erase those days from the journey? Do we just say, okay, well, here's a day where I'm feeling really low and really unhopeful about our future, so I can't talk to anyone? That seems ridiculous and totally unfair and the exact opposite of what you need when you're having a day like that. And what's more is when you can't talk about days like that, then you feel completely alone, which is a horrible feeling. And to take it one step farther, when you're constantly told to not lose hope, the other side of that message is keep fighting. And what does that mean to couples who are deciding to stop fertility treatment, to terminate a pregnancy, to say goodbye to a child after he or she is born, to stop treatment for their very sick baby in the NICU? Does that mean they've stopped fighting? Does that mean they've given up? No way! Those are some of the hardest decisions that any human being has to make. Did they make them because they lost hope? No way. No way. They made these decisions from a really, really hard place. And these are real decisions that real couples have to make every single day. Do we do another cycle or not? Or are we done? Do we do treatment for our baby in utero or not? Do we take our baby off of life support in the NICU or not? These are very real decisions. And when you hear don't lose hope, it makes you feel like you're doing something wrong, like you're giving up on life, on your child's life, on your future, when in fact, what you're doing is just having to make an impossible decision that's breaking your heart. You're not giving up by making the hard decisions. You're not losing hope by making the hard decisions. You're choosing healing over more heartbreak, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. This is something that comes up so often. This came up for us all the time through our very lengthy journey to building our family. Do we do IVF or not? Or do we stop and just accept the fact that we won't have any children? That was a decision we had to make. What do we do with the baby? There was a day when I was 23 weeks and 2 days along. That was the day that my water broke. It was a complete shock. I was fully hyperventilating that day when they moved me. They rushed me from from mother baby. They didn't have an antepartum unit. They were actually literally constructing it at the time that I was in the hospital. I could hear the construction. And they rushed me from mother baby, where I was just hanging out, back into labor and delivery because my water had broken. And really, in most cases, when your water breaks, you deliver pretty quickly. Most of the time, like half the women within 24 hours and another 25% usually within a week. So the stats were against me. The odds were against me again for like the 900th time that year. And I remember there was a neonatologist that had come in. It was crazy in the room. There was like so many people running around. There's bright lights. People were scared because it was, oh no, 23 and 2, like the chances of him surviving is not very good. Like it's really, really early. It's just too early. And the neonatologist came and sat by my, or stood right next to my bed. I was like barely breathing. There was these blinding lights shining right at me. My husband hadn't even come yet. he had been called from the office and he was like rushing his way over. I think if he could have flown, he would have. His office wasn't that far away, but, you know, traffic. And she was standing there. She had this gray fleece on. I won't ever forget. And she had her hands in her pocket. Her hair was tied up. And I didn't know this woman. I mean, I talked to a lot of neonatologists up until that point, but I didn't know her specifically. I'd never met her before. And she asked me, if the baby's born right now or today, do you want to resuscitate? Never in my life did I think I would have to answer a question like that. How do you answer a question like that? Do you want to resuscitate your child? That's insane. No parent should have to make that decision. And yet there are so many of us that have to. And what goes into these decisions obviously is a lot of data and research. We've had, up until that point, several neonatologists come in and tell us the statistics of, you know, chance of survival and chance of a healthy life and a chance at an independent life. And we heard all these terrible numbers about babies that are born at 22 weeks and 23 weeks. We hadn't even touched 24 weeks, which felt like an eternity away at 23 plus 2. And yet we had to make that choice, right? We had the statistics on one side. I had the experience of having felt him kicking me for like 2-3 weeks prior to this. So he was a real person to me. I could feel him. He was doing great. And then there was this message, don't lose hope. Thankfully, nobody said that in the moment. I think I might have punched someone if they had said that to me in the moment. But there's this message, right? This idea that you don't lose hope. You don't stop fighting. You don't give up. And later down the road, I remember thinking, are the parents who choose not to resuscitate giving up? I don't think so for a second. I remember when I was in the NICU after he was born, I want to say maybe about a month in, maybe a little bit less. No, probably about a month. There was a baby that was born a little shy of 24 weeks or right around 24 weeks, and the parents chose not to resuscitate because they heard the statistics and they're not good. I will tell you flat out, they are terrible numbers that you never want to hear about a child. They heard about what happens. You know, it's a baby in the NICU is, you know, like my son who was born so early was ventilated. They don't put you under. They don't sedate babies necessarily when they're ventilated like they do for adults. And it's painful for them to have to fight for their life and to watch your child have to fight for your life. It's painful. And I remember a nurse coming in and telling me these parents chose not to resuscitate. And I remember thinking back to that moment of we had to make that choice. And if we had listened to this advice of don't lose hope, don't give up, what a horribly guilty conscience we must have had, we would have had, you know? How much guilt would we have had to carry with us feeling like we gave up? When it's so not that. Those parents made a tremendously difficult decision for this child. They never gave up. It was far from it. Far from it. But telling couples like us or those couple, that couple there, like, don't lose hope. Keep going. Don't give up. Makes decisions like this impossibly hard, much, much harder than they already are. And they're already freaking impossible to make. It's easy to say, well, in that situation, here's what I would do, or I would never do that. You don't know. You don't know until you're right there. You just don't know. But I'll tell you this, it's not giving up. It's not losing hope. And if we stop saying that to couples and instead meet them where they are and say, where are you? Where are you? What are you thinking about? What are you feeling? How do you feel about this decision? What are you thinking about it? It opens up the door for them to actually consider the options without guilt. Decision-making in a medical setting after this whole experience has become a huge passion of mine. So once in a while, I'll work with clients just on making a decision. Obviously, for my high-risk pregnancy clients in my one-on-one program, that's definitely built into it. But sometimes clients will come to me and they're in a situation where they have to make a really big choice and they don't have a lot of time to make it. And so sometimes I'll just take on a client or two and work with them or their partners to help them, guide them through this impossible medical decision that they have to make. Never advising on what I think they should do, but also never telling them to keep hope, because I want them to have a safe space to explore what their options are, no matter how awful it makes them feel. And so a while back, I had the opportunity to work with a woman who was just done. She was so burned out. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, you could see like the life had just drained from her. She was so exhausted. She had gone through fertility treatment and conceived her first through IUI, which is intrauterine insemination. And if you're not sure what that is, I did a podcast episode, I believe 45, goes through all the different fertility treatment options. Intrauterine insemination to conceive her first. It was after like 3 or 4 cycles of that she conceived her first baby. You know, she had a great pregnancy, baby's great. I think baby was about 2.5 or 3 when they decided, okay, we want to try again. Obviously, we're going to need to do IUI again because that's what we needed last time. And unlike last time, she didn't get pregnant. They did cycle after cycle after cycle. And every time it was time to test after the IUI, about 2 weeks later, she'd take the home pregnancy test. Her hopes would be up. She said, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the cycle where we get to see the positive pregnancy test. Maybe this is the one where it's going to work. And the test would be stark white. Another failed cycle. She'd tell me she'd throw it away and she'd just sit in the bathroom and sob. And half her brain would go to, okay, my period's going to come and then I'm going to call my doctor on cycle day one and we're going to do this again. And half her brain was starting to say, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And what she told me when we worked together, so she came to me because she felt like she was ready to stop. Her husband was very open. He said, hey, if you want to keep trying, we'll do it. If you want to stop, I'll stop with you. He's very supportive in that way. So she felt no pressure from him, but she did feel a lot of guilt and pressure from her doctor and from her friends and her family who were telling her, don't lose hope. Don't lose hope. This will work for you. And she felt so much guilt at even considering stopping because she felt like she was giving up. Because when you tell somebody not to lose hope, you're telling them to keep fighting, assuming that choosing to stop means you're done fighting. And that's just so not true. And so when she came to me, she was so burned out and she was just, I don't know what to do. And she was so confused. And as she's talking, I could get a sense of what was happening in her head, which was like 17 different people's voices talking to her all at the same time, telling her what she should do and why she should do it and why she shouldn't stop. And it was like she was making pro-con lists for everything. And believe me, as a complete pro-con list addict, I fully understand that, right? I love pro-con lists, and it is part of the decision-making process, but it's not the whole thing. That's where we get it wrong. When we just make pro-con lists, we assume that our decisions are made purely in our heads, and they never are. Never, ever, ever. Whether you're running away from being chased by a bear, or you're making a decision about where to work or what career changes to make, or you're making decisions about your family and your health, it is never made purely from our heads. So pro-con lists, as much as I love them, as much as I'm obsessed and addicted to them, they're not enough. So what I did with her is we worked together to, first, we had to clear her head from everyone else's voices that was just clouding her mind. And the reason we had to do that first is so she could really start to hear what her instincts were telling her. Because here's the thing, we always know what to do. We always know. It's when our head gets involved and then other people's voices get thrown into that we get confused. Most of the women, I would even say all of the women that I work with, are very good at collecting information. They're very well informed about their health situation and questions to ask and what the information is. So she knows what she's up against. But it's a matter of, okay, given that information, what's your instinct? What's your gut telling you to do? That gets buried. So we had to clear her head from everybody else's voice that was just like drowning out her own voice. That was step one. But it wasn't just about hearing her voice, because that many of us can do on our own, right? Not all of us. Sometimes we need help. And depending on the decision, we really need, we need to talk things out or bounce things off of other people. And that's important. But it's not just about hearing your own voice. Then, which is the more challenging aspect of it, is releasing any guilt that's associated with going against the messages that you've been given. That's hard. That's hard. It's very hard to do. And if you've ever had to make a difficult medical decision of any kind that's counter to what a lot of people believe is the right thing to do, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because you feel awful and you start doubting yourself and you feel insecure about the decision. You don't feel confident about it at all. You start looking to other people for validation, but because you're in such a unique situation, most people don't understand what you're having to go through and they don't know how they would make the decision if they were in your shoes. And so then you don't have a great mirror to bounce this off of. And that is a big problem going forward. And that's what I wanted to turn around for her. So we worked on releasing that guilt, because if she hadn't done that, that's when you go forward after making a huge decision, wondering for the rest of your life, did I make the right choice? Feeling really raw and sensitive when you see the impact of your choices being different than what you expected, right? It's when you start to see, when you start to hear comments from people or questions from people because you're not feeling confident about your choice, you start to question yourself. And that doubt, that insecurity, those what ifs, that guilt is absolutely not something you need to live with after making such a hard decision. You need to feel peace. And this is the way to do that. And so when we released that guilt, we took out the voices from her head, we released that guilt, and we really built up her confidence in her own instincts and in her own voice. She realized really quickly that she was actually done with fertility treatment. And she wasn't giving up. That's the thing. It's not that she didn't have any hope. She wasn't giving up on growing her family. She was just exhausted from the failed cycles, one after the other. She was exhausted from having hope and being let down, one cycle after the other. And she had done her due diligence. She had talked to so many doctors about her particular situation. And really what it came down to was she was so ready to move on and stop living her life waiting for something to happen and actually live her life the way she wanted by making choices instead of just, I hope it works out this time because then we'll be able to do this. Then we'll be able to do that. Then we can do. And she was done. She was tired of waiting. She was tired of the heartbreak. You are not giving up by making the hard decisions. You're choosing healing over more heartbreak, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Well, how do you know when it's time to stop without regretting that decision? Right? Because that's the thing that we all worry about is, am I going to regret this if I choose to stop treatment or to stop medical treatment for my child or to terminate the pregnancy or anything huge and hard like that? And it doesn't have to be so life and death either. I've had friends who had to decide, do I want to do IVF or not? Even as simple as that, because that closes the door on how you grow your family. But we all of us, you included, I know, sit there and think, am I going to regret this? And how do I make this decision without regretting it? And here's the truth. Regret comes when you make a decision that's not in line with your true core values. And the only way to access your core values is to remove the judgment that's running through your head. And that judgment comes in from two places. Okay, first, it comes from other people. You know, you start wondering, what will your doctors think if you make that choice? What will your family think? What will society think? What will my friends think? Can I even tell people that I did this? And the second place that it comes from, which is even the harsher critic than that, is the judgment from yourself. What does it mean about me if I choose to stop fertility treatment, if I choose not to do IVF, if I stop medical treatment for my baby in the NICU, if I choose not to go to this therapist that my doctor, my pediatrician is recommending for my child, if I choose to terminate this pregnancy, what does it say about me? That judgment prevents you from accessing your true core values and prevents you from listening to your gut. You're literally slamming the door shut from making that possible. So now you might be wondering then, well, how do I get rid of that judgment? Because it's everywhere. You're right. It is everywhere. It is absolutely everywhere. And we could spend weeks and months and years trying to remove voices from your head. But let's be real. You don't have that kind of time. I didn't when I had to decide whether to resuscitate my child or not and all the other medical decisions that came after that. This client didn't, who had to decide within a couple of weeks whether to do another cycle or not. And that's why I teach my clients to listen to their bodies. Because your body will 100% of the time convey to you when the decision is right as you're considering making a choice. I had another client who was contemplating terminating a pregnancy, which is another impossible decision to make, and she could not get her mind to shut off. She had everyone's opinions and thoughts running through her mind, research from her doctors, opinions from her family and her priest and her community, and then thoughts about what it meant for herself if she continued the pregnancy and if she terminated. Both came with very negative judgments of herself because of what she was dealing with her baby. Her baby who had medical complications that they'd just found out. And it was driving her insane. And she couldn't sleep at night because she was so restless and so anxious. And all of our work was centered around an embodied approach to decision making, which just means I taught her how to let her body guide her to the right decision, because your body will never lie to you. Your body does not respond to these judgments that are in your head. We can talk ourselves in and out of anything because of what's going on in our head, but our bodies will never be swayed by those judgments, and they will never lead you in the wrong direction. We've just got to learn how to trust that, how to listen to it and how to trust it. Because here's the thing, and I know you've experienced this too in maybe other situations, maybe not medical decisions, but when you're making the wrong choice that's against your intuition, against your gut feeling or whatever you want to call it, your body will tell you. Sometimes it might be through like chest tightening or your heart racing or your breath quickens or you can't sleep and you just feel so uncomfortable in your body. I mean, there's so many different ways that it shows up. It's very different for each person. These are just examples of that. But when you're making a decision that's aligned with your instincts and values, your body tells you that too. You might notice a relaxation of your muscles. You might feel like you can breathe again. You might burst into tears because finally there's some flow. You're not blocking yourself. You're not getting in your own way. And it just feels like such a relief to make the decision. And it all goes back to this one point, right? Which is to say that these decisions are not easy. And even if it feels better physically to make that choice, there's still tremendous grief that needs to be worked through after your decision's made, regardless of which way you choose. But making decisions in a meticulous manner like this, yes, pro-con lists may have a place in your process. They sure do for me. But taking this embodied approach to decision-making helps ensure that you will not regret or doubt your decision going forward. And that's what matters most, right? That you can make this impossible decision. And I mean, I've said impossible so many times that I think it's losing its value, but it really is so impossible sometimes. Like, there's no good choices here. And yet you're able to make a decision and you're able to move on with your life in peace. That's what matters most, doesn't it? You are not giving up by making the hard decisions. You're not losing hope by making the hard decisions. You're choosing healing over more heartbreak, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Thank you so much for joining me here today. If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love it if you can head over to iTunes and leave a review so more and more women can find Delivering Miracles and they can tune into the episodes for inspiration and tips and motivation on how to find peace and inspiration to trust themselves when they're having to make really difficult medical decisions on their fertility journey, their high-risk pregnancy journey, their NICU journey, or just their parenting journey after baby's home from everything. And if you're stuck between a rock and a hard place and you're having to make a really difficult decision and you don't have a lot of time about your health or your family building journey, and you just don't know what to do, and you want to make sure that you don't regret whatever decision you make, shoot me an email at info@barijatdeshpande.com and put decision making session in the subject line, and we'll get back to you with all the details on how we can work together and how I can support you to find peace moving forward when you have to make a really hard decision. I'd also love to stay in touch, so follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Parijatdesh. That's Parijatdesh. There's a beautiful quote that I just read recently by Jose Harris that says, "Waiting hurts, forgetting hurts, but not knowing which decision to take can sometimes be the most painful." I've been there, and if you're there right now, I know it's hard. It hurts. Nothing feels good. Nothing feels right. But I promise you, you can find peace. And I promise you that you are not giving up. You're not losing hope. But you can find peace. Take it one day, one step at a time. You can do this.